every champion has a team behind them. And for thousands of families without insurance, Christ Clinic is that team. At Christ Clinic in Katy, Texas, they provide high-quality, faith-based health care to people who can't afford it, because everyone deserves a shot at health, no matter their income or insurance status. Their doctors, volunteers, their mission, rooted in compassion. Their impact, over 10,000 patient visits every year and growing. But they can't do it without help from fans like you. If you ever cheered for a comeback story, this is your chance to be a part of one. Donate today at ChristClinicKaty.org and help them keep the doors open for those who need it most. One gift can be the difference between surviving and thriving. Christ Clinic in Katy, where health meets hope and faith goes to work. That's Christ Clinic Katy, spelled KATY.org. Team up with them today.
Welcome back to another episode of Live Better, brought to you by the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, the show where we dive into the stories, lessons, and mindsets that help us live healthier, think deeper, and push to become our best selves. Every week, I sit down with guests who have built something that challenges the normal, people who overcome setbacks, redefine industries, or found new ways to make life better for others, because that's what Live Better is all about. Learning from the people who prove that growth isn't about where you start, it's about how far you're willing to go. And today's guest carries one of the most inspiring legacies in American business. Back in 1961, a young man named David A. Jones, born and raised in Louisville, Kentucky, borrowed just $1,000 from a friend to start a small nursing home. No outside investors, no big corporations backing him, just a belief that healthcare could be better, more efficient, more human, and more compassionate. That small operation grew into Humana, first the largest nursing home company in the country, then the largest hospital corporation in the United States. Eventually, Humana evolved again, becoming one of the nation's leading health insurance companies with over 65,000 employees and a market value that soared above $30 billion. And Humana has been recognized as a Fortune 50 company, consistently ranked among the most admired businesses in healthcare. It's a company that has not only shaped how care is delivered in America, but also sparked conversations about what it means to balance profit with purpose. And at the heart of it all was a man who believed in people. And David Jones wasn't just a businessman. He really was a visionary and a humanitarian. He led one of the most groundbreaking medical partnerships of its time when doctors at Humana Hospital performed the world's first permanent artificial heart implant in a human being. That surgery, watched by millions across the globe, represented a leap forward in both science and courage. But beyond medicine and innovation, he carried a deep sense of responsibility to humanity. After the fall of the Berlin Wall, when much of Eastern Europe's healthcare systems collapsed, President George H.W. Bush personally asked him to help out and rebuild infrastructure medically. So this is going to be a great one. His son's coming on to talk about his legacy and the book that they wrote. So if you guys are excited for this one, stay tuned. I'm your host, Blake Byrne, and this is Live Better, and I'll see you right after this.
Keep listening for details on how to get up to $300 airline credit. Sky Holidays introduces a one-of-a-kind air credit program. Our buying team got a little too aggressive in getting hotel and air deals, so now we have to liquidate our prices. Here's how. Whether you want to go to Paris, Las Vegas, London, Atlanta, Hawaii, or anywhere else in the world, we have amazing deals. Book a selected hotel and we'll give you up to $300 airline credit. Now you can book your vacation and get a free credit to use towards airline travel. We'll book both, airline and hotel, with one simple phone call. We have access to most airlines and deals on thousands and thousands of places to stay. Call right now, book your hotel rooms, claim your airline credit. You can change or modify it at any time. 800-256-4816. 800-256-4816. That's 800-256-4816.
Every champion has a team behind them. And for thousands of families without insurance, Christ Clinic is that team. At Christ Clinic in Katy, Texas, they provide high-quality, faith-based health care to people who can't afford it, because everyone deserves a shot at health, no matter their income or insurance status. They're doctors, volunteers, their mission, rooted in compassion, their impact, over 10,000 patient visits every year and growing. But they can't do it without help from fans like you. If you ever cheered for a comeback story, this is your chance to be a part of one. Donate today at ChristClinicKaty.org and help them keep the doors open for those who need it most. One gift can be the difference between surviving and thriving. Christ Clinic in Katy, where health meets hope and faith goes to work. That's Christ Clinic Katy, spelled KATY.org. Team up with them today.
My fellow Americans, let the message ring out that from this day forward, when you buy American, you buy the best. Handcrafted, something premium, something pure. For this is the very essence of what our servicemen and women gave their lives to protect, and by God, we shall not allow their sacrifice to be forgotten. It's time to show the world just how great American can be. And we will not wait for tomorrow to come. We will stand here, this moment, together, and we will start today. Celebrate responsibly.
Welcome back to Live Better. I'm your host, Blake Byrne, and you're tuned into the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. I just want to start by setting the stage for where this incredible story begins before Humana became a Fortune 50 company. It started with one man, a small loan, a massive vision. And I want to talk about those early days and what really sparked this journey. But before we get into that, David, thank you for joining me. How are you doing today, man?
Hey, I'm doing great, Blake. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for the great introduction that you gave. That was really wonderful to listen to.
Of course. Of course. I'm excited to I love having entrepreneurs on here and hearing the stories of someone who may have been not – you know, seen as someone who's going to be something as they would be in the future or how big they would or something that they would grow. So I can't wait to hear the story and, the triumphs that your father may have overcame and, challenges that he succeeded. So I'm super excited for that.
One of the great pleasures of working on the book with him was the, just starting in the early days and, having known his family and his early friends and stuff. I mean, it was a bunch of hungry, can-do, optimistic people who just got a lot done together.
Yeah, so I guess, what was his family like? Was it, did he come from a rich background or, was it just, humble beginnings?
Well, I think it's, looking back, we would all say humble beginnings. He was born in 1931, so that was, 2 years into the Great Depression. His parents were both, people with roots in farm country who had, were kind of the first generation to be city people, if you will, back in those, days when the move from the farm to the city was a, was a big theme. His mom was a tough Irish, mom. His dad was a laborer, from a Protestant family. And, 1931, almost none of the men in the neighborhood were working at that time. The Great Depression, again, a time when just enormous numbers of people were out of jobs. His mom worked at a laundry. Eventually, she got a job as a clerk at the Census Bureau and had a steady but small paycheck. But, his telling of his growing up was, nobody had any money, but we were all, because everybody was poor, nobody thought they were poor. That was sort of his summary. So he was doing odd jobs and helping and, kind of anything he could to earn a dime or, or a dollar from a very early age. But then, you know, he was also, so he was born in 31. He was not of military age during World War II, but he was very impressionable as a young man when the veterans came back from the war in that period of, you know, just great post-war boom and optimism. And that just had a real impact on him. I mean, he just was confident in not only himself, but in his community and in the, you know, the people he would rely on as his colleagues in building what, you know, he was constantly surprised. And I mean, he was surprised at how big it came, but he was never surprised that they could succeed because they, you know, they focused and worked hard. I'm sorry, I'm rambling. I'm counting on you to cut me off when I'm going, when I'm rattling on.
You're good. You're good. So just to learn a little bit more about your father personally, before we dive into, like, you know, the business and his values, because I know that's a big thing that he, you know, strived himself on. You said that he grew up in, you know, Protestant faith. Did any of that, was that a driver for him? And, you know, I guess what he was pursuing and, you know, the values and morals that he kept with him?
I think it was an important element in, you know, in several ways. I mean, going to church was, you know, a requirement, you know, growing up. He and my mom were, you know, they married in the Baptist church in Louisville, Kentucky, where both of them, both of their parents, I guess, were going. My mom had gone to youth group at a Methodist church just one block down, but church was really important to him. You know, the, from his, maybe, I don't know whether it was the Catholic side or just the value side, but tithing was a big value. And, you know, kind of as he became more prosperous, you know, giving, sharing, you know, putting his resources to good use, not only for his family, but for others, was, you know, it was a value that was drilled into him from, you know, from those early days. But, yeah, and he was, I know this is a little bit, it might sound kind of silly, but his mom, my grandmother, was famous in the Baptist church that, you know, that she stayed in, you know, all her life. I mean, she was a very fierce member, but she was famous for making a joyful noise with her singing, which was completely off key at all times. Neither she nor my dad could carry a tune. He said they couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. And, you know, he carried that forward. I remember when, you know, being in church with him and my mom, and he would just sing loudly and she would just hit him with her elbow because he was so far off key. You know? But yeah, but you know, they would just say, hey, it says make a joyful noise. It doesn't say make a perfect noise.
Hey, yeah, you know, he was just being nice about it, you know. So I guess what made him start Humana? Like, what, he had $1,000, a vision, you know, to build a better nursing homes. What was his original why? I know, kind of doing a little research, he's big for you can always do it better. What was that vision?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think there were two pieces of the why did he and his co-founder build the first nursing home. First was each of them had the experience with one of their grandmothers who, when she got old and, you know, maybe senile, was beginning to just became beyond the ability of the family with the work schedules and everything to take care of. You know, she moved into what was the nursing home of the day. And this is, you know, the 1930s, again, the Depression era, very, very hard times for everybody. But, you know, each of these, you know, elders were kept by a neighbor in a room with, you know, six or seven other elders, and the conditions were just terrible. I mean, often if they were too frail to sit up straight by themselves, their arms would be tied onto the chair arms to, you know, to keep them upright. I mean, there was no nursing involved. The good news is it was, you know, the community was doing what it could to help. but it was, you know, the conditions were bad. And so when they thought, man, we can do better in the early 60s, that was the image that they had. The other was, you know, his co-founder was a young lawyer. You know, he went to law school on the GI Bill, moved back to Louisville, which is where he grew up. He and my mom were married at that time. I was born and one of my siblings. And, you know, he wanted to make some extra money. And he went as the young lawyer to help a wealthy client of the law firm close a house deal, buy a house. And it was a great big old house. And the buyer was a guy who my dad had known in high school. He's a few years older, but they went to the same high school. And after the house closing, Dad asked him, he said, "How, you know, I knew you when we were both in high school. How can you afford this house?" And the guy said, "Oh, Dave, I built a nursing home, man. I mean, it's a great business." And so Dad rushed back to the office and told Wendell Cherry, his partner, who was from Horse Cave, Kentucky, small town about an hour and a half down the road. He said, Wendell, we got to build a nursing home. And that was like their market research. And they, you know, they both knew a lot about building. They had, you know, they knew how to finance it from their, you know, being junior lawyers and doing all the scut work for, you know, for larger projects. They knew how to get some of the things done cheaply and all that. So they each borrowed $1,000. They got three other partners. One of them was the HVAC contractor, and the other two were the real estate agents who found the property for them. And, you know, those guys each, you know, put up or took stock worth $1,000 in kind. And that was financing for the first nursing home. So it was, you know, it was a combination of entrepreneurial focus on what could be a good business and a belief that, you know, and again, that post-war period, people were moving further away from their families. The, you know, the world was changing really fast, and there were a lot.
Hey, David, I have to cut you off really quick. We'll jump right back into this when we come back here right after this.
Everyone watches more than 5 hours of television. Really? And that's not counting mobile viewing. Get Dish TV and make that time worth it. With Dish, you can get hundreds of channels, access to all kinds of sports, tons of movies, premium channels, and more. Another thing that's really cool with Dish is you can watch most of your favorite shows on your mobile device anywhere for a lot less than cable. Yes, that's right. We are asking you to watch more TV and not less TV, but make it better television with Dish this time, anytime, anywhere. So call right now and learn how easy it is to save on your television bill and get the most out of your TV viewing experience. Dial that number and I promise you we're here waiting for your call because we want to save you money and give you better television. We are Dish TV.
800-293-0328. 800-293-0328. 800-293-0328. That's 800-293-0328.
If you've got a property that you've been trying to sell and you've tried almost everything, I want to tell you about something that you haven't tried yet. You're going to think this offer is too good to be true, but it's not. Thousands of customers have sold their homes in any condition with Need to Sell My Home. This is a real opportunity from a highly rated company that buys homes all over the country. Did you know it's possible to sell your home right over the phone with no real estate commissions and no pesky open houses? Plus, every offer is a cash offer with no mortgage holdups. To find out how much you can sell your home or property for, call now. Take 5 minutes of your time and call for this 100% free quote to sell your home.
800-430-0674. 800-430-0674. 800-430-0674. That's 800-430-0674.
Packages start at $29.99 a month with signed agreement. Restrictions apply. Speak to a representative for complete offer details. See Vivint.com for license details. Terms and conditions apply.
Homeowners, if you're looking for the best in home security and smart home technology at a price you can actually afford, we have great news. Now you can get Vivint's award-winning home security systems starting at about a dollar a day. U.S. News and World Report has recognized Vivint as the best professionally installed home security system of 2022. And right now, you can get Vivint's home security technology for about a dollar a day. Plus, get free professional installation from a licensed technician. Protect your home and loved ones for as low as a dollar a day. Call right now for your free home security consultation.
800-918-6189. 800-918-6189. 800-918-6189. That's 800-918-6189.
Welcome back to Live Better. I'm your host, Blake Byrne, and you're tuned into the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. We're back with David Jones Jr., and I want to shift gears a little bit. We talked about how it all started, but I want to get into what made Humana and your father's leadership so ahead of its time, from innovation to the people to how healthcare continues to evolve. There's a lot to unpack here, and I guess I want to start with my first question here. Your father often said he preferred hiring ordinary people who learn fast and get things done. Why did that approach work so well compared to just hiring people who already had been in that position before?
Well, I think, you know, there are a couple reasons. The first thing was, you know, the company started where he grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. That's where it's still headquartered. And he was... partly it was the time that it was started, but you know, there were already fancy colleges and fancy, you know, big city, you know, law firms and accounting firms and consulting firms. But, he went to the people who he knew or who he, you know, who he met, along the way. And he was really, one of his great skills was he was very good at both giving people a chance and trusting them to take a crack at doing something. And he was then also very good if they, you know, if they couldn't do it, if it was beyond their capacity, but they worked hard and they were honest, you know, putting them in a different place, or if they weren't good at it, or they were not, you know, not effective at communicating whether it was working or not. He was good at moving people out. So he had really good people judgment. And I think the second thing I would say about that, Blake, is he felt like he learned a lot of that in the Navy. You know, he went to college on an ROTC scholarship at the University of Louisville and owed the Navy 3 years when he finished. And, you know, he got to go see the world. He cruised in the Caribbean, in the Mediterranean, went through the Suez Canal into the Mideast, and really saw the world. But he also saw a very powerful leadership model where the, you know, the commander, the captain of the ship had the authority to make decisions. And often, like at the hurricane that just came roaring across, they were in a hurricane in the, you know, in the Caribbean one time, and it just made a huge impression on him that the, you know, the skipper, you know, had to make decisions. If he didn't make decisions, the ship would founder. And at every level, anyway, at every level, the officers were working with very useful people. And as the most junior officer, you know, he was, you know, he had responsibilities that were way beyond his experience, but he was well trained for them. And, you know, he got the chance to perform, and if he didn't perform, he heard about it right away. So that leadership model really stuck with him, and he, you know, he credited that, you know, kind of the opportunity to have the authority for leadership at a very young age. It's like the main thing he took away from his military experience.
So maybe you might not know this. What did he look for in people
when, you know, scouting, you know, I guess talent, is there like a, you know, a telltale sign that this person will be someone who is, you know, motivated and, you know, will pick up on things quick?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, he asked people to do things. He told them very clearly what he needed, and then he let them loose. I mean, he was never a micromanager. And then, you know, if they did a good job at one thing, he threw something bigger at them. And so the whole company, you know, was built. And I think there's still a lot of this today. Healthcare's so complicated. There's nobody who knows how to do everything in it. And, you know, so people who get stuff done, who can solve problems and can resolve conflict, you know, without leaving everybody mad, those were kind of traits, you know, that he looked for. But, you know, it was intensity and passion. I should also say, I mean, the work was always serious in the nursing home days, you know, caring, you know, the sort of the idea of the golden rule. I think that was another part of his, you know, his Baptist upbringing, you know, treat other people as you want to be treated yourself, was really important. And, you know, think of these as if they were your own parents. That's how we're caring for people. So he wanted people who felt a sense of both mission, but also worldly demand to get the job done. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I completely understand. So from starting in nursing homes to, you know, moving to hospitals to leading in the medical fields, they started the first artificial heart program. What did that mean to your father, you know, as a leader and a visionary?
Well, I think it was, you know, there were both practical and, you know, just sort of personal excitement elements to it. You know, the shortage of hearts, once the doctors learned how to transplant a heart, you know, and heart disease is such a big killer, there was far more demand for heart replacement than there were hearts available. And the quest to find, to be able to create an artificial heart that the body would not reject was a major focus. And there was a doctor in Utah who had performed, you know, and I mean, he'd gone through all the training, and Texas was the place where the greatest heart surgery at the time was. But this was a very well-trained doctor in Utah. But the operations were expensive, and his hospital basically said, look, we're not going to, he had done one artificial heart implant, and it was somewhat successful. The person lived for a couple of weeks, and then, but the hospital said, we're not going to fund this anymore. And, you know, my father and his, you know, his partner, Wendell Cherry, reached out to the doc, and they said, look, we'll, you know, bring it here. And if you'll donate your time, we'll donate all the hospital services. And, as long as it is clinically and from a research perspective, as long as there is progress that justifies the risk taking, you know, because this was a very risky operation, but it was a big focus of the research efforts at the time, we'll fund it. You know, their perspective was, as long as we have an empty hospital bed and our surgical suites are not full all day long, you know, the incremental cost to us is not very much. It's the team of nurses and, you know, there's some salaries, but it's not that much. And so, you know, the first patient they did lived almost 600 days, I think, if I remember right. And it was a big deal at the time. It was, there was a, you know, the shocking thing about it, and I was not living in Louisville at the time, so I didn't experience this, but the press came from all over the world. I mean, literally all over the world. The company had to rent, like, the ballroom of the biggest local hotel to set up a press room. And the level of fascination in this idea of an artificial heart was so high that very unexpected byproduct was suddenly, you know, the word Humana became, you know, well known. The company, which at that point probably had about 50 hospitals, so it wasn't a small company, but, you know, most people at that time, even more than today, don't choose hospitals based on consumer brand. They follow the advice of a doctor or something like that. But the publicity was just unbelievable. Unfortunately, you know, the research pathway proved a dead end, at least so far, because, and again, I'm not a doctor, but the body rejected eventually the the artificial hearts and clotting, you know, blood clotting made it, and the drugs that it took to prevent that were, you know, so powerful that the side effects were, you know, were not endurable, and so the patients could not live either long enough or a high enough quality of life, because they wound up being kind of tethered to the health system in a way that was hoped that would not, you know, that would not happen. So the research on artificial hearts at that point was abandoned for full transplantation. They're still used, though, for a pathway to people who are waiting and are close to getting a human heart off of the transplant list. Anyway, is that the right level of detail to go into on that? Because it was a very important thing for the company, but it was a combination of exciting to be able to be part of important research, but then this incredible shock of the level of global interest. And people are fascinated about hearts. I mean, I think that's tomorrow's, I guess, Halloween and not Valentine's Day, but that's still kind of true.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating, especially going from, you know, starting in, you know, Louisville, Kentucky to, you know, nursing homes to where they're at now or at that moment. But I'm Blake Byrne. You're listening to Live Better, and we'll be right back with more right after this.
It's time for you to come to Branson, Missouri for the trip of a lifetime. Located right in the middle of the country, you can drive or fly there. We put together a deal of a lifetime for you to experience Branson. Right now, you can get a 3-day, 2-night package for only $79 total. We're even including 4 free Branson show tickets. Call the special Branson hotline number right now to learn more. 800-497-7198. 800-497-7198. If you've never been to Branson, Missouri, come visit and see what we have to offer. Beautiful lakes, casual and upscale restaurants, tons of shows and activities for everyone. And for $79 total, you can't beat it. So pick up your phone right now and call the Branson Travel Hotline. Claim your 3-day, 2-night package plus 4 free show tickets for only $79 total. Call now. 800-497-7198. That's 800-497-7198.
Have you been daydreaming about losing weight for years? Do you just yo-yo back and forth? At Innovative Wellness Center, we have a holistic weight loss program that allows you to lose up to 20 pounds in 30 days. People are losing weight like crazy and keeping it off. It can be done from anywhere in the United States. Go to our website at www.innovativewellness.center. and schedule your complimentary consultation today.
Getting together with friends to watch the game? Then you'll need American Premium Vodka. Handcrafted and pure, this is the one thing all Americans can agree on. Founder Mark Gus Scott chose the finest natural elements America has to offer, and you'll taste how great it is to be an American. Now available at BevMo, GoPuff, Hy-Vee, and Fairway stores. American Premium Vodka. This is the America we need right now. Go to AmericanPremiumVodka.com. Celebrate responsibly.
Every champion has a team behind them. And for thousands of families without insurance, Christ Clinic is that team. At Christ Clinic in Katy, Texas, they provide high-quality, faith-based health care to people who can't afford it. Because everyone deserves a shot at health, no matter their income or insurance status. Their doctors, volunteers, their mission, rooted in compassion, their impact, over 10,000 patient visits every year and growing. but they can't do it without help from fans like you. If you ever cheered for a comeback story, this is your chance to be a part of one. Donate today at ChristClinicKaty.org and help them keep the doors open for those who need it most. One gift can be the difference between surviving and thriving. Christ Clinic in Katy, where health meets hope and faith goes to work. That's Christ Clinic Katy, spelled KATY.org. Team up with them today.
Welcome back to the Live Better. I'm your host, Blake Byrne. You're tuned into the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. I'm back with David Jones Jr., and I want to take a moment to step back from business, maybe hop back into it a little here at the end, and I want to talk about something even bigger: values, family, and the lessons that last long after the titles and the achievements fade. And one thing I want to ask is, so you helped your father, write his book, Always Moving Forward. Which one do you personally live by most today in terms of lessons that you've learned?
Well, that's a good question. I would say, one of my dad's prime lessons, and in the book, he had a list of like his 12 or 13 lessons learned that when he would go speak to, he loved to speak to student groups, stuff like that. He'd always take them and hand them out and talk them through. But, number one, he said, family first. You have to have a life. Life is about a whole lot more than your work. Work is really important, but, family first, and make sure you live a life that, that is meaningful to you, in addition, to your job. I think that one has been really important to me. He and my mom set a great example, and the nice things you said about him, none of them would have been possible if it hadn't been for my mom keeping him really firmly grounded. She was they had agreed on whatever their values were. They shared them when they began their family. And she never really let him get, we kind of say in these parts, he never was allowed to get too big for his raisin, kind of. He was, he just couldn't get too big for his britches. I mean, it was like, he and the other boys had to clean the table and, wash the dishes, load the dishwasher. That was just, no matter what kind of important meeting he was jetting back from, the basics were pretty important. The other thing that I kind of come up with, and I'll give you two, but the one that's most important to me personally was focus. And this is kind of the lesson for people who are trying to build something. And it can be a physical craft, if you're trying to apply a craft, build a house or build a company or lead a nonprofit or a church or something, focus on your task. You can do anything maybe, but you can't do everything. And that has been a really hard thing for me in my life. I'm curious about an awful lot of things, and I am prone to chase multiple rabbits and catch none of them. So it's a good lesson, and he writes about that. The last thing, and this is something that it's critical in our public sector or private sector everywhere, but he was a firm believer that leadership had to come with the right authority, the amount of authority to go with the responsibility that you were taking on. And he would just, he would not take on any task that he wasn't, that he actually didn't have the authorization to do. So when President Bush asked him to go, figure out how the United States could help rebuild the healthcare system in Eastern Europe after the Berlin Wall fell, he basically got agreement that he would get, with one of his friends in the healthcare system, a gentleman named Boone Powell from the Baylor University system in Texas. The two of them went over and they went around and they met with everybody, but it wasn't a State Department or government project. It was, they went and they came back and they made their report and made some recommendations. And, you know, then there was great partnerships with government, with the Romanian government, with healthcare systems and everything. But it was, you know, just an example of, you know, if I'm going to do the job, I want to, you know, I'm going to do it. And that's, you know, I see that again and again in different organizations where it can be boards of directors or investors or sometimes donors. If it's a charitably supported organization, we'll try to put strings on the leadership in a way that keeps them from getting the job done. And if anyway, I can go on about that, but those would be the three. He's got, you know, other posters. I mean, other, you know, other ideas, but you know, family first, you have a life, focus and make sure you have the authority to fulfill the responsibility that you've taken on.
I like those. One of the big ones that I kind of took away from that is find a great wife as well. So I kind of want to switch lanes here a little bit. Why did the public react the way it did with the shooting of the CEO of United Healthcare? It seemed like a lot of people were obviously on the side of, I believe his name was Luigi, Mayuigi, I don't know. But why did people react that way?
Well, I think, a couple thoughts. First, you know, we got to all kind of acknowledge that we're in a period where political assassinations are, you know, are happening, and, you know, they're incredibly distressing. They're destructive of the fabric of, you know, of the country, you know, every one of them. And the murder of Brian Thompson, United CEO, fits right into that horrible category for me. It is, you know, I do think, however, it is important for everybody in healthcare and everybody in government to recognize how frustrated so many Americans are with our healthcare system. And actually, that's, you know, one of the reasons I'm excited to be on your show, Blake, is, you know, if I understand it, your focus is really on how we can all live better, how we can, you know, kind of manage ourselves and make the world work for us. And, you know, I mean, this could be a 4-hour conversation about, you know, what's wrong with the healthcare system and how to fix it. But, you know, there are, you know, sort of, I don't know, I'll try to condense it. And there's no surprise here. I mean, you know, one thing is the costs are both very high for so many people, and they're quite unpredictable. You know, I mean, what you pay for a given procedure or interaction depends on, you know, what kind of insurance card you have in your pocket. And a lot of that depends on where you work and do you live in the city or the country. So affordability is a huge issue, but it's embedded in this maddening unpredictability. I mean, there are lots of things in our world. All of us have things that, you know, we would like to, you know, be able to afford, but we can't. I don't think it's only the cost of healthcare. I think it's the confusion and the bureaucracy and the unpredictability. The other thing that is just critical, and I think getting more important, you know, in this kind of post-COVID strange, you know, post-burnout environment that we're in, or maybe it's still the burnout environment, but access to healthcare is really hard. I mean, there are whole parts of rural America where people have to drive, you know, 2 hours or more to have a baby delivered, or to see, you know, to get the kind of care that in the city is, you know, 10 or 15 minutes away for pretty much everybody. And there are also places where there are just grave shortages of a lot of different kinds of doctors, particularly primary care doctors. So I've heard in lots of places in California, and not only California, people who move there might have to wait 2 years before getting an appointment with a general practitioner or primary care doctor. And, you know, so access, you know, is the second. Affordability is the first. Access you know, is the second. And then I think, you know, third would be just the maddening bureaucracy of, you know, we all go in there and we're asked to sign umpteen forms that say the same thing. Sometimes, I mean, my experience is they don't even show me the form. They just give me a signature pad, electronic signature pad, and ask me to just sign something blank. I don't even know what it is. And I think that takes away people's trust. And then, you know, I'd say the last thing, and then I'll shut up and you push me in whatever direction you want. But we talk about the healthcare system, but we don't have a healthcare system. Our what we have is a sick care system. And, you know, this is not original with me, but, you know, what we have is, you know, insurance pays and, you know, our great hospital systems, you know, the miracles that we do, and we do fabulous, fabulous work curing disease and treating, you know, defects through surgery. I mean, we have a miraculous medical care in this country, and incredible drug invention. I mean, we can talk all day about the miracles, but what we don't have is a sort of a system that is aimed at helping us be healthy. I mean, like, in my experience was, as long as I had a team and a coach, and it was sort of and had both peer pressure and coach pressure to stay in shape, that was, you know, that was pretty good. But that, you know, best case, that gets you into your early 20s. And then, you know, our environment right now, so many people are, you know, they struggle with the just ubiquitous availability of cheap, delicious calories. So, you know, obesity and the cardiometabolic impacts of that are everywhere. We also have, you know, for whatever reason, loneliness, isolation, and the, you know, kind of mental and emotional struggles that so many people are going through. And we could go on about the different kind of things, but a lot of them are about, you know, how do we live our lives in the modern world? And there are good answers to those, but what we call the healthcare system that we pay so much money for really doesn't, I mean, there's almost nobody in the healthcare system who thinks that's their job to, you know, to help with those problems. And I think that's I don't know that that is why people are mad, but I do think, you know, it's a real mismatch in where we're spending our money and maybe sort of the amount of well-being that we could get if that were part of the equation.
Yeah, you definitely cracked it on the head with Live Better is all about obviously having entrepreneurs on and things like that, but also have a lot of holistic practitioners and people in, you know, the wellness industry. Because me myself, I dealt with Crohn's disease, and I was going to, you know, I was doing Western medicine, you know, just doing like infusions and things like that to mask my issues of what was really going on. And then I switched to Eastern medicine, you know, with like holistic practitioners, you know, natural remedies, frequencies and stuff like that. And I can say I'm healed of Crohn's. I have no issues from it. I used to be severely sick with it. So, I mean, there's I think preventativeness is more important. And then, but I think people overlook it. They just, you know, don't think about that. And you're in America where calories are easy to consume. But David, I have about 30 seconds here left with you. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story and your father's story. Where can they find your book at? So they can come check out and read more about it.
Great. Thank you. It's on Amazon and you can order the hard copy. You can also get it for your Kindle. Or if you prefer to listen to your books, you can get it via an audio book. But Amazon is the easiest, easiest go-to spot. And thank you. I've really enjoyed the conversation, and Blake, and thank you for, you know, for really pushing on the issue of, you know, how can we organize ourselves to, you know, do our best in constructing good lives for ourselves. Because it does take
of course,
a lot
David.
Of personal motivation, man. And congratulations on navigating Crohn's. That's no easy thing.
Thank you. And thank you for joining me. This was Live Better, and we'll be right back with a little bit more after this.
This is a true sad story for ADT, the leader in home security systems. My favorite dog, Oliver, was stolen from our garage recently. If I had a camera system installed in my home from ADT, I would have known exactly what car possibly pulled up in my driveway and stole my little friend. If I had a security system from ADT, my dog would still be here. I called ADT this weekend, and they're coming out in a few days to install a camera and a new security system. Unfortunately, it's a little too late for me. Listen, protect everyone you love in your family. Call ADT now. Have them come out and give you a quote to install a full security system in your home. Don't let it be too late for you. Call right now.
Paid for by the Home Security Hotline. 800-361-3491. 800-361-3491. 800-361-3491. That's 800-361-3491.
I am an American veteran. I'm proud to have served this country. Helping veterans is something all Americans can participate in, and it's as simple as donating an old car that you have sitting around. When you call the Veteran Car Donation Program, they'll explain how their program works and then arrange a time they can come and pick up your vehicle for free. Running or not, it doesn't matter. They take cars, trucks, motorcycles, or vans. Show your support by donating your car and get a tax deduction in the process. Call the Veteran Car Donation Program right now. They'll come and pick your car up for free, and you get a tax deduction in the process. Call the number we're about to give you right now. Thank you, and God bless America.
800-887-1097. 800-887-1097. 800-887-1097. That's 800-887-1097.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or injured at work, you have rights and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-401-5163. 800-401-5163. 800-401-5163. That's 800-401-5163.
Welcome back to Live Better. I'm your host, Blake Byrne, and thank you for tuning in to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. What an incredible conversation today. Seeing how David Jones Jr. really made me reflect on what it means to build something that truly lasts. Because when you peel back the layers of what his father accomplished building Humana from a $1,000 nursing home into a Fortune 50 healthcare company, it wasn't about ego or wealth or recognition. It was about the impact. It was about making something better, not just for himself, but for others. And I think that's what stood out the most in this conversation, that belief his father carried. There's nothing being done that can't be done better. And that one line sums up the entire philosophy of living, whether you're talking about healthcare, leadership, fitness, or just personal growth. The statement is universal because every one of us has something in our life that we can improve on, something we can take ownership of. And it might be our health, maybe our relationships, our mindset, or our work. And the second you start asking, how can I make this better? You shift from being a passenger to being the driver of your own life. And what I loved hearing about David Jr. was how his father never stopped learning. Even after decades of success, he stayed curious. He surrounded himself with people who thought differently. He listened more than he talked, and he understood something that's easy to forget, that success without purpose means nothing.
And I think that's a powerful lesson for anyone chasing goals right now. You don't have to sacrifice your values to achieve greatness. In fact, your values are what makes your journey more meaningful. So thank you for tuning in with me today. I hope you guys got to take something away. And I'm your host, Blake Byrne, and this has been Live Better. Keep chasing progress. Keep believing in better. And no matter what, keep moving forward.